All right, we're in 2 Kings. We'll be in chapter 4 of 2 Kings. We're going to be talking about a home with a difference, a home with a difference. We've all heard, especially in this country, of separation of church and state, separation of church and state. Today, most Christians practice separation of church and home. You know, they just think that church is something you do at church and home is something you do at home. They put them in separate silos. They think that Christianity is compartmentalized. But Christianity isn't compartmentalized. Christianity is everything we do. Christianity should be permeating through everything we do. When we have Christianity, it is best served in large portions. We don't need to ration it out. Being Christ-like doesn't need to be divvied up. You know, we can be as Christ-like as we ought to be. We should seek to please God in all we do. And I know it's far more useful as we act out in our Christian lives to be more of a buffet rather than a small dish restaurant. You know, we should be a living, breathing testimony to others. There shouldn't be separation of church and home. There should be something we do hand in hand. And homes that are surrendered to the Lord Jesus Christ are rare. We've made our homes to be fortresses, which are impenetrable. Who here has gone on a tour of Fort Knox? Anyone gone on a tour of Fort Knox? All right, I was looking this up on my phone, so it's on the internet, so it's got to be accurate, right? Yeah, sure. All right, access to the depository at Fort Knox is restricted. Only two presidents have ever visited, Franklin Roosevelt and Harry S. Truman. And a presidential order is required to gain access. So we're not probably going to be taking a church trip down there, but there's some people that treat their homes like it's Fort Knox. That the folks they see at church, those who are hurting, that we never invite them in. And I just want to say that our homes should reflect the values of biblical Christianity. And the account that we're going to be looking from, once again, is in 2 Kings 4, and we're going to be looking at home that makes a difference. First of all, we're going to be talking, Elisha is the subject of this affection that we get to see in this home from the Shunammite household in this account. And Elijah had been his adopted father to him and had anointed him to be a successor. Elisha did many great works. Among this included the account just prior to our text for tonight, and with the well-known story of multiplying the poor widow's cruse of oil. And there are other items of note for Elisha, but the point is that he is a noted servant to God. And he also is, he happens to be one of my favorite prophets. And part of it is because we have something in common. He was bald.
Amen.
Amen, see? And then, look, when the children mocked him, you don't have to go there, but I'm just making note of it, just an extra piece of scripture. When the children mocked him, he took care of business. Just remember, any of you kids want to mock my baldness or Brother Strickland's baldness or anyone else's baldness? And he, in 2 Kings 2, and he went up from thence to Bethel. And as he was going up, by the way, there came forth little children out of the city and mocked him and said unto him, go up, thou bald head! Go up, thou bald head! And he turned back and looked on them and cursed them in the name of the Lord. And there came forth two she-bears and out of the woods and tare 42 children of them. So the note there is, don't mess with a bald man. He's got the power to call bears at any moment. Got that, Reagan? You better never mock my baldness. I'm balding. That's good. All right. Comparison to Brother Strickland, yes. But anyway, but more to the point, Elisha is a mighty servant of God, and he was used mighty in a lot of ways. But the place that we're going to be dealing with is in Shunem. It's a resting place, a little village in the tribe of Issachar, and to the north of Jezreel, and south of Mount Gilboa, and where the Philistines encamped there against Saul. But anyway, it's in the northern part. And then lastly is the Shunammite woman. While Elijah was in Shunem, he encountered by this great woman. And this is the catalyst for the biblical account and gives us a great example of how we should engage in others. So we're going to be looking at the scripture in verse 8 of chapter 4. It says this, and it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, Behold now, I perceive that this is a holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed, and a table, and a stool, and a candlestick. And it shall be, when he cometh to us, that he shall turn in hither. And as Elisha was passing by, he encountered a great woman. She went so much trouble because she knew he's a holy man of God. We see that in verse 9. She did not designate him as a nice man. Note, Elisha wasn't necessarily a nice man. He didn't take the comment about being bald and going up on this hill and going up on that hill kindly. He sent bears after children. He wasn't a nice guy, but he was a holy man, wasn't he? And we get so caught up in society, we're always worried about being nice to people. Holiness is better than niceness. There's lots of nice people I would never want my daughter to marry. You know, there's lots of nice people out there that I wouldn't want to be acquainted with because they're not holy people. We're supposed to be looking at righteousness over niceness. And definitely baldness is also a quality. It doesn't mention that in this passage, but it should. Anyway, she did not designate him as a nice man or popular or brilliant or a successful man of God. She was touched with the godliness of his life in a time of moral depravity. We note this much about Elisha. Number one, note that his godly life was distinctive. Note that this woman perceived that Elisha was a holy man of God. I don't know if there was the way he talked or walked or what he did, but he was distinctive. Do people in our community perceive that we're holy people of God? Do they know something is different from us than other people? The Shunammite woman was able to make the connection. We live in a world where we try to fit in so much that people can't tell we're Christians. People should be able to tell that we're Christians. People should go, man, there's something different about that guy. Do not underestimate the importance of being caught doing the right thing. I am not expressing the idea of self-promotion, but if you do right things, you'll get caught doing them. Elisha was evidently living in a way that he was caught doing the right things. You ever catch somebody doing the wrong thing and they go, oh man, this is the first time I've ever done this. What's the reality? If you generally do wrong things, it perpetuates, doesn't it? If you do wrong things in life and you get caught doing wrong things, it's because you do a bunch of wrong things. Once in a while, do people catch you at your worst? Yes, but in general, if you live a good and godly life, you're going to get caught doing the right thing. If you live a wicked life and you continually do wicked things, you're going to get caught doing the wrong thing. Here, Elisha was caught doing the right thing. His life was distinctive. His godly life was distinctive. His godly life was impressive. Not just distinctive, but impressive. This woman was impressed enough to have her husband build him a separate room in her house. As Christians, we're constantly under the scrutiny of others. Do they see Christ in us? When we use the term prophet's chamber for a room or an area designated for hosting a pastor or missionary in a home or church, here is where it's from. This woman had been so impressed with the work that was done by this man of God, she did something we use as an example today. She states, let us make a little chamber. Can you imagine being so impressed with somebody that you go, you know what, every time you pass through, you got a room here. You are so godly, I'm going to put a room in my house for you. I have not had any of you say that about me, which I don't know what that says. Rebecca may want to have room for me somewhere else's house. But at least the kids. But she was so impressed, she decided to do that. Space and privacy are explicitly important to us today, as I'm sure it had been always. But she was so enamored with Elisha that she prayed her husband to do this unique work. So impressed with him. Not only was he distinctive and impressive, his life was extensive. With the phrase, he passeth by us continually, it shows that Elisha wasn't just a Johnny-come-lately. This was someone that was consistent. If you were observed day to day, would you still be considered a holy man of God? Would you be considered a holy person of God? Would you be considered, if someone observed you day by day, continually, would you be observed as being a holy person of God? Elisha was that kind of man, and his consistency is notable and should be challenging for all of us. It's hard to be consistent, right? That's the hardest thing with raising kids, is being consistent in raising kids. It's the hardest thing in being a boss, is being consistent with your employees. It's the hardest thing about doing anything in life, is doing it consistently. Not only was holiness detected in this woman's house, the family was able to detect what holiness was. They were actually helpful. There was a helpfulness that was found in this home. Not only could they see holiness, they also could do something that was helpful. Man, that looks like that guy could really use some help on the side of the road. Have you ever seen someone on the side of the road? Man, that would be nice if someone would help him. You see a missionary come through and they got a prayer request. Oh, we need some money to get whatever. And you go, it'd be really nice if someone in the church would flip the bill for him, if they would just get that for him. We always kind of look like, it would be really nice if someone else saw it. It would be really nice if someone else would do that. This family said what? Hey, we're going to take it upon ourselves. There was a helpfulness in that home. The Bible says in verse 8 that this woman, she was great. It's thought that in the context that she was a woman of wealth and renown. She is not a person that hoards her wealth and looked for opportunities to be a blessing. She freely gave to this man of God. She provided for him practically. She didn't try to impress him with wealth, but rather simply provided Elisha with food and shelter. She was committed to the ministry of hospitality, not to entertaining him. This ministry should be characteristic of us. 1 Timothy 3:2, a bishop should be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach. Bishops should be what? Given to hospitality. Like, aha, the pastor should be the one that's always hospitable. The pastor should be the one that's always the guy who's given to hospitality. The pastor's to do that to be a good example for other believers. We all have the responsibility to be given to hospitality. We're all supposed to be taking people in and being kind to them. Titus 1:8 says, but a lover of hospitality. A lover of hospitality. Not only are you given to hospitality, you have to love it too. Man, I love it when people are over at my house. There's some people, when I say that comment, they're like, oh, someone in my house. The pastor's coming over. I have to clean. And then you clean, and when they come over, you go, sorry, my house is so messy. It's probably the cleanest it's been in months. But when someone comes over, you go, sorry, it's a mess. Because when you're not here, it's 30 times more messy. But the idea is, you have to be a lover of hospitality. You have to love it. Do you really love having godly people in your house? Man, can you imagine? I can't wait for the next time some people come over, dirty up all my dishes, and I can just do a big stack of dishes. Love it. I love it when they eat all my food. Love it. When they come over, I love hospitality so much, I'm going to give them a bowl of cereal and milk that's right on the border of expiration. That's how much I love them. When you love hospitality, man, oh, I hope my wife cooks something real good for him. Oh, Becca, will you cook that cheesecake? That's so good. And then hopefully we have another half of cheesecake left, that when the kids are in bed, I get to eat the other half. Oh, man, I love people so much. I want to make them, if the best thing in my house is venison, I'll cook them venison. If the best thing in my house is chicken, we'll get them chicken. If the best thing I have, when I have people over, I want to make sure that they understand that I don't just like them being over, I'm a lover of hospitality. Whoa, what a difference. Not just a liker of hospitality, I like you. A lover of hospitality. They bring their game up. In 1 Peter 4:9, use hospitality one to another without grudging. I got to have them over again. I got to have Christians over. Oh, they're the wrong type of Christians. They don't believe just like I do. I'm going to hide my Disney movies. I don't want them catching me looking at a Disney movie. Oh, or whatever it is. Man, don't hate having people over to your house. Enjoy it. Oh, gotta be nice to somebody for a day. Oh, It should permeate through you. She provided for this guy practically. She gave him food. She gave him a place to sleep. Can you imagine having someone come over and go, look, I know you don't have a spot to stay in. I'm going to build you something. That's how much I like you. She provided for him regularly. There was no fleeting mood of kindness which suddenly came upon her and suddenly disappeared. This was a commitment. We should share such commitment. It's like losing weight. January 1st, I'm going to lose 50 pounds. January 7th comes, and I gave it a good week shot, and I didn't lose my 50 pounds, so we're back to the Red Robin diet. It doesn't work. It's a terrible diet, by the way. But we should be consistent. We should be able to carry it on. It should permeate through us because we love doing it. She consistently did it. And then she provided for him spiritually and physically. Along with meeting his practical needs, many suggest that the room had a spiritual significance. The bed represented the spiritual rest, the table the spiritual food, the stool represents communion, the candlestick represents testimony. Perhaps that's the case, but either way, the room certainly provided solitary place for his prayer and meditation. Another commentator stated perhaps a little more practically, said this, let us set for him a bed, that there may stay all night as he pleases. A table, not only to eat his food, but to write on, to lay his books on as he reads, of the table of a scholar, of a wise man. In latter times, we are told that 2/3 of it was covered with a cloth and the other 1/3 was uncovered. Once again, I don't know how these guys know anything that I don't, but in a stool to sit upon the table and a candlestick. With a candlestick to light him up at night to help him read. And then it says, and it shall be when he cometh to us that he shall turn in hither where he should be free from noise of the house. That he should be retired for prayer, reading, meditation, and study, not to be disturbed with the servants of family, be mixed with them. I don't know about you, but when I study, when I'm really studying, I don't like a whole lot of noise. I was so used to it when I lived in Oshkosh or in the Berlin area before I came here, I was used to having kids scream all the time when I was typing out stuff for church because I worked at home when I was doing church stuff. I was used to that noise. And I came here the first week, there's no one here. Pastors, and it was sounded like this. It was the sweetest sound ever. There was nothing. When I'm really studying, I don't listen to songs with words in it. I don't listen to talk. I don't listen to anything. I definitely don't listen to Packers talk radio because it's so depressing now. I'll listen to classical music. I'll listen to something without words because I really want to be able to focus and to study. This woman provided him a place to study where he could just sit and do this. There's probably no dinging of Facebook notifications. There's probably no text messages. It was just... Can you imagine what kind of studying you get if you're not bothered by cell phones? Quiet is a good thing. She provided it for him. She provided for him on a spiritual level. She gave him a place to retreat. She gave him a place to rest. She gave him a place to study. But through all that, she noticed his holiness. They were able to be helpful to him. But there was also a happiness that was brought to this home, a happiness that was brought to this home. In verse 11, it says, and it fell on that day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call the Shunammite. And when he called her, she stood before him, and he said unto him, say now unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is to be done for thee? Wouldst thou be spoken for the king, or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among my own people. And he said, what then is to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old. And he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And she said, nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid. And the woman conceived and bare a son at that season that Elisha had said unto her, according to the time of life. When Elisha inquired of what could be done for her, she responded, "I dwell among mine own people." In other words, thanks, but I have all I need. She was content. And with contentment, we see that there are happy people. We know 1 Timothy 6:6, godliness with contentment is great gain. It's one of the best investments. It's the best investment you can have. Contentment is the mother of happiness. It's the first step to happiness. It is, or is to a content person. You are no longer self-centric, but you are concerned about other people. Your world is not about yourself, but about Christ. Your home should not be wrapped up about just your own family unit. It should be about how you can better serve God. My home should always be the hub of how I can glorify God. It's not just about the long signs in this house. It's just the long signs. It's as for me in my house, what? We shall serve the Lord. The Lord is the preeminent focus. The Lord and me doing His work is the preeminent part. In John 13, turn to John 13. I preached a message on this not too long ago, but we'll just take a look at a couple of verses there. Serving others is so important. In verse 15, it says, "For I have given you an example," in chapter 13, "that ye should do as I have done unto you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them." Foot washing passage. Jesus speaks of happiness in service. It's an amazing phenomenon we see when we actively serve others as a family. When mom, dad, and the children all serve others, your family ends up having a happy contentment. And they're happy in their service because life isn't all about them. And we got a birthday party for Jesus. You know, it's the idea is what? This world is not revolving around you. Do you know how sad it is for kids when they grow up and they turn 18, 19, 20 and they get jobs out there? It turns out the world is not rotating around them. Earth does not go around me. The world is not rotating around me. I am not going to go down and tell anybody what to do. Life is not fair. I do not have command over the world. Is that not a terrible thing that I do not have that kind of power in this world that I can just tell everybody what to do? Well, man, I was kind of hoping someone would be on board with that. Hey, the world doesn't revolve around us. And as soon as young people can get their hands wrapped around it, as soon as moms and dads can get their hands wrapped around it, as soon as grandmas and grandpas can get their hands around it, life changes. I don't have anything to care for myself if I'm caring about other people. Oh, man, it's my day. It's my thing. You know, life does not rotate around us. As we see how happy people should act in 1 Timothy, we see the opposing view of contentment and happiness later on. So we looked at 1 Timothy 6:6, which was, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." But 1 Timothy 6:9 says this, "But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which draw men in destruction and perdition." This woman was an antithesis of godliness, of that kind of the idea of the rich falling into temptation and a snare. She was the antithesis. But she had riches, she was not falling into a pit or a snare as other folks. There's a relatively new phrase out there. There's a relatively new phrase. And it's this. First world problems. Who's ever heard of the first world problems? You know what first world problems are? They're problems that we create because we live in the greatest country in the universe. We don't have real problems like other countries have problems. Were you able to get clean water today? Were you able to get a hot shower today? Did you have anyone shooting at you today? I mean, right? I got to go to church. Pretty awesome. I got to get in my car with four wheels on it. I got cars I can drive. I got clothes I can wear. I have multiple pairs of shoes. I got cell phones. I can call people. I can find out the weather. I got all sorts of things. But there's this phenomenon called first world problems. Here are some of the things that the richest country in America complains about. It's boiling hot outside, but freezing in the air-conditioned office. My personal trainer took the week off, so I have to work out alone. My wallet won't close because there's too much money in it. I bought a dishwasher and now spend longer packing and unpacking it than I did washing it up. My brie is too hard. You know that problem, Pastor. Yeah. My earphones get tangled up in my bag. You know, if you ever have headphones, they never come out right. I chipped my nail varnish. My Fitbit is causing unsightly tan lines. I spotted someone wearing the same outfit as me. By the way, I saw one time I was at Boston store. I was walking through and the lady was walking by me and she was wearing the same pajama pants that I had at home. And I was like, oh, look at that. She's wearing my football pajama pants. Would have been embarrassed if I was wearing them at the same time. These squeaky new shoes, which hurt, they hurt while I'm breaking them in. The snagging of my designer clothes. Over, under brewed tea. Cheap coffee. Oh man, you ever have cheap coffee? Oh, it's terrible. Remote control batteries ran out. I don't have any batteries. I have to go up and press buttons. A disappointing air freshener. Stepping on something wet while wearing socks. It's terrible. Hair sticking to lipstick or lip balm in the slightest breeze. I've never had that problem. Updating your mobile phone and losing all your contacts. It's a terrible, terrible thing. Can't find your Tupperware lids. You ever try to put leftovers away? You got the Tupperware lid, you're like, where did it go? Kids! Sitting on your designer sunglasses. Having to watch movies on a phone because the tablet battery died. Wanting another car, but not having enough room in your driveway. Wanting to take your tablet outside, but the Wi-Fi doesn't reach far enough. The living room isn't big enough for the coffee table, recliner, and sofa. Getting popcorn in your teeth. Forgetting your phone charger. Cold leather car seats in the winter. You know, my car doesn't even have heated leather seats. Disgusting. My car won't play MP3s. The football game is on cable and not on local channels. Supermarket checkout staff scanning faster than you can actually bag your groceries. Can you imagine not even having a bagger? Having a restaurant table indoors on a sunny day. Lipstick clashing with your nail polish. Batteries going in the television remote. Cash machine gives you a $50 bill. Oh, the shop not stocking a Coke bottle with your name on it. Keel getting stuck in the deck of a boat or yacht. You know, this one's a killer. Not having the latest edition of an iPhone. And the glare, the sun glare on your iPad, phone, or tablet. Hey, we got real problems like that all the time. There's always something, isn't there? Us rich people have all sorts of real problems. Here's part of my first world problem. You know how hard it is to find a shirt with my neck size and my arm length? I'm like an ape. My arms like hang out. It's killer. I think a bunch of people have like little midget arms out there. Life is hard in the first world. First world problems. That, in a lot of ways, is the world we live in. We get fixated on odd things and complain about it. Do we complain about odd things? I'll tell you one of the funniest things is, it doesn't matter what church you go in, there's something not to like about it, there's something to complain about, and whatever church it is, there's something to whine about. You go home, there's something your spouse doesn't do. You go to work, there's something that annoys you. We, as human beings, find things to complain about. It's our nature. The rich have first world problems. But it's only by determination that's determined what this woman really wanted. You know, they asked her. Elisha's like, hey, what do you want? And what'd she say? I want nothing. What if I asked you, what do you want right now? Do you have a Christmas list all written out? Is there anything you want for Christmas? Anything you want for your birthday? Anything you want in life? Is there anything you want to buy? Is there anything you wish you had a device for? And I go running sometimes. I wish I had retractable clothing like sleeves because like it's cold out and then I'm running, it's hot. I mean, there's things I wish I had. There's weird things I wish I had. But when Elisha asks her, what do you want? What was her answer? Nothing. Whoa. Whoa. What do you want? Could you really say nothing? Can you imagine being in life and not wanting a thing? Note what Elisha does. Elisha found out the one thing she did lack. It was the joy of a child's presence and the music of a child's voice. And if you have kids, you kind of joke about it. You know, like, oh man, the kids, the noise they make, the voices you hear. Mom, 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 mom. Dad, 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 dad. And you're going, man, no child's sound sounds like music to me. However, when you hear in the hospital, when your child gets delivered, and you hear that first cry, there's nothing more precious than that. When you go to an ultrasound, and they're trying to find the baby, and they see the baby in the womb, and you can hear the heartbeat, wow, 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 wow. The first time I saw the heartbeat of my son Reagan, just a little guy, little guy, brought tears in my eyes. God formed that in the womb. What did she want? She wasn't looking for matching lipstick and fingernail polish. She wasn't necessarily looking for anything, but Elisha found something. The joy of a child's presence, the music of a child's voice. How many people missed their kids when they were little? And missed those opportunities to snuggle with them, to kiss on them, to love on them. My little boy's getting bigger. My little girls are getting bigger. Sophie, do you want to be my baby? No. If you were to think for a moment, what would you want? Her service was noted, though. This woman did not have ulterior motives. She didn't want to brag about herself to others or her ministry that she gave to Elisha. Elisha went the extra mile in finding out how he could bless her. He noticed her generosity and humility. This is the way we minister to others. Or do we attempt to be flashy to get something out of it for ourselves? Do you ever hope that we do something and we're kind of doing it quiet, but we're really kind of hoping someone notices us? We're hoping for a little bit of a reward, a well done. This woman wasn't looking for it at all. It's natural and many times a wonderful blessing to have a relationship with reciprocating blessings. However, the Bible warns us against bragging or manipulating others. Proverbs 25:14 says, "Whoso boasts of himself of a false gift is like clouds and winds without rain." In Jeremiah 9:23 it says, "Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches." When you're excited or proud of something, it's normal to be excited. It's normal to share. Yet, with her, you never see that. You see a woman and a home that's far different in its perspective. These folks were too busy doing the right thing to spend time bragging about it. Can you imagine just being too busy doing the right thing to spend time bragging about it? Her service was rewarded. In verse 17, it says, "The woman conceived and bare a son." Kind of reminds me of Matthew 10:41. Turn there, it'd be a good thing to look at these words. Remember Jesus' words, Matthew 10:41. "He that receiveth a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he that receiveth a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward." God genuinely rewarded this woman, didn't he? If we were continuing on with the rest of the account, we'd see some more bumps in the road, but God ends up being the hero one more time for this woman. And that isn't the only, that's just not the focus of this message, but the focus is really the amount of power a godly family has on those that it encounters. Conclusion is this, is your home, is it filled with holiness, hospitality, and happiness? We'll only achieve these things if all the possessions, even our very homes and lives, are completely surrendered to the Lord's service. You know, what's the phrase there? We're to love people and use things, not use things and love, or not love things and use people. You know, we need to love people. Remember, we ought not to practice separation of church and home. Our Christianity better be expansive. What's the song? This little light of mine? This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. And then the second verse is what? Hide it under a bushel? No. I'm going to let it shine. We ought to be the kind of folks that we're out there and actively engaged in trying to be a blessing to other people, that we're actively looking with our eyes to find what holiness looks like, and that when we find holy people, that we put our arms around them, and that we're lovers of hospitality. And we're not necessarily looking for a reward, but understand that God rewards people through what? Through contentment and doing His service. I am happiest when I'm serving Christ. When I'm truly serving Christ without motive, I'm the happiest.